Hello, welcome back. I'm Taylor Payne, and it's another weekly edition of Pod on the Tyne, your fully independent Newcastle United podcast. And I'm joined by Chris Woff and George Cock. And Chris, how are you doing? Are you all right? Did you enjoy your trip to the South Coast? Of course you didn't, because it wasn't you.
The south of my lawn I walked to at one point over the weekend.
Even that's far from
it
you,
was,
isn't it?
It was far too far. Territory. But no, I was going to say I enjoyed watching the Bournemouth match from my sofa, but I don't think you could enjoy that game. That match from my sofa, yeah.
That's definitely closer. George, how about you? Did you endure that trip down south?
I did. It was a very quick trip. I am now safely back in the bosom of my cats and in God's country in the northeast.
It's a long way to go for that, isn't it?
It was a very long way to go for that. I mean, as I said on the matchday pod, I have seen worse there.
Oh, absolutely.
2 years ago, after the last Champions League campaign, I came back. I shared a train carriage with Amanda Staveley, who'd been weeping in the away dressing room at her inability to help Eddie Howe and his players after that pretty miserable 2-0.
Yes.
2-0 defeat. Had a couple of gin and tonics on the train that time though, so that was kind of quite good. But It's not been my favourite weekend ever, let's put it that way. But we're back, and it was an interesting test, and now it's a week of two more interesting tests of a different nature.
It certainly is. Right then, chaps, Newcastle news in 30 seconds or less. George, we'll start with you. Carabao holders to start their trophy defence, with Arteta's Arsenal waiting at the weekend.
Oh, doesn't that sound good though, doesn't it? You
know,
it is.
Holders.
It is Bradford City, but you know, Newcastle United are cup winners. This is their trophy, and as Eddie Howe said at the weekend, he wants to win it. He wants to win it again. So yeah, brilliant test for the squad again. There'll be loads and loads of changes at St James's, and then it is Mikel Arteta's second place Arsenal, who are always in second place. They're coming to St James's Park. What will happen? Will Newcastle park the bus like Man City? Will they have a go? We'll find out.
We will. Fabian Scher, head injury update, Chris.
Yes, well, Fabian Scher, having avoided concussion seemingly after the Liverpool game last month, when the initial suggestion was he was concussed, did eventually come off against Barcelona, arguably too late. He has a 12-day rest period he has to have for concussion protocols, which rules him out of... The Bradford game rules him out of Arsenal. Theoretically, he might be back for Union Saint-Gilloise, but that'll be touch and go. So it looks like there'll be other defenders on show for the next week or so.
That boy's head is an absolute trauma magnet, isn't it? He's always getting knocked over.
Such a beautiful head as well.
I know, this is it. For a man who's so attractive, how has he had so many blows to the head? I've got no idea.
I mean, I know this is in 30 seconds or less. I know we're being lighthearted, but there is actually a far more serious discussion to be had about concussion protocols in football.
Of course.
Even with Scher himself receiving so many blows to the head, should have what happened have happened. And yeah, it just feels like football is so far behind other sports in this regard. But yeah.
Yeah. George, the Lasses lost and Sue Cumming retires.
Well, yeah, a 4-2 defeat at Birmingham City at the weekend, the same time as the men's team were playing, 3-0 down at half-time. That was not the bouncing back that Becky Langley talked about. Post Sheffield United. And yes, it's the end of an era. Sue Cumming, the very influential head of football, is standing down. We hope to get her on the pod in the not too distant future.
Lovely stuff. Right then, chaps, Bournemouth, let's take a bit of stock after that game. Steve Ferrer on Blue Sky sent us a little message which said, in 2023-24, they were the accidental entertainers. This season, any entertainment is truly by accident. Chris,
that's a bit harsh.
Chris, what is this version of Newcastle United? It's certainly new.
Yeah, I mean,
it?
The accidental entertainers tag was I gave them after Newcastle went to Chelsea, and it was fairly chaotic at the back. That was the back end of the 2023-24 season when Newcastle had been injury ravaged, and then were sort of searching really for their identity at that stage, and it was hard to define exactly what they were. They scored a lot of goals, but conceded a lot of goals. Now they don't concede many goals, but don't score many goals. So it is very much flipped in that regard. I think that it was interesting exchanging messages with a few people in around the first team dressing room after the game at Bournemouth, and they were talking about how Newcastle deliberately adapted their style, and that they're going to have to do that to be successful over the course of this season. And so they went to a five at the back. They want to be able to change the system and change the style more easily and more seamlessly. That's something that they're trying to do now. But then, whereas defensively, it seems, no matter what system they play, no matter which personnel are in there, although they have had consistent selection largely there, that they are delivering and aren't conceding chances, never mind goals. But going forward, the relationships are still being built, the lack of a centre-forward at certain points, the new centre-forward coming in, learning to play with him. I don't yet know what this version of Newcastle United is. I don't think Eddie Howe does. I don't think any of the players do, because it is a work in progress. All of them accept that it is a work in progress. And they didn't get the players in very early in pre-season as Howe necessarily wanted. We know that the striker situation went right down to the last few days of the window. And so I think that we have to wait a few more weeks, if not months, before we can really judge who and what this Newcastle are. But I also give that as the caveat of Eddie Howe really makes a huge impact when he can have his players on the training ground consistently, and Newcastle aren't going to be training very much over the course of the next few weeks and months because they have so many games that they don't actually have the luxury of having that training time that they did. Then that was an issue 2 years ago. Newcastle have learned from that, but it still is a problem now.
Just very briefly on Steve's point, I mean, certainly, you know, Bournemouth, that was very, very difficult to watch. I mean, I don't particularly want to spend any more time thinking about that, let alone talking about it. But, you know, Newcastle, the way they started the season at Aston Villa, that was a very different away performance. Perhaps it's no coincidence that Anthony Gordon has been missing for these last two games at Leeds and Bournemouth, because he led from the front, certainly against Aston Villa, in terms of that pressing, that hard pressing. I know Newcastle didn't take their chances, didn't have a centre forward on the pitch, but he gave them such an outlet. He'd had a great pre-season, and you know, Newcastle played with great aggression against Liverpool. They weren't lacking in that match in terms of forward energy. You know, Barcelona, the first few minutes, first 20 minutes against them, that was, you know, that's the kind of Newcastle you want to see. But they're having to get round the fact that for the first few matches of the season, they don't have a centre forward. Now they have a new centre forward who they are not wanting to overburden in terms of workload. And they're getting used to a player who is just not Alexander Isak. He's a different kind of footballer. What we saw against Wolves, some lovely moments, you know, when Newcastle sort of had a bit more of the ball, but he's going to get time to get used to. And I think, you know, this is a work in progress as a team and a squad. And we're going to have to get used to him, Eddie Howe, changing the team around, changing his squad around too.
Well, it certainly seems that plan A is to press and high press. And plan B seems to be these three centre-halves, or this 3-4-3 or 5-3-2 or whatever, 5-2-3, whatever you want to call it. What we didn't mention, though, on the match day is that Bournemouth had a free week as well, Chris, didn't they? And they've now got another free week as well.
They do, yeah. And I mean, I think that's... You can paint Bournemouth in a negative light because of that, because they had a full week to prepare for the game. They probably didn't expect the side that Newcastle put out, because Eddie Howe made 7 changes. But for Newcastle to have largely matched them and really restricted them, I think is impressive in that regard. But yeah, they have another week, and they have that week to work at it, whereas Newcastle have the Carabao Cup on Wednesday. They then play Arsenal on Sunday. They then play Wednesday. They then play Sunday. So it is constant for Newcastle at the moment. I mean, plan A, press, plan B, perhaps three centre-halves. I get where that's sort of coming from, but I also think that makes it seem as if Newcastle have only done 2 things so far this season. I think that the three centre-halves at Leeds was different to the three centre-halves, not just in terms of personnel, but the way they approached it at Bournemouth. It was more defensive, or at least caution first, I think, at Bournemouth, and it had been at Leeds. It didn't work at Leeds, but I don't think that was necessarily the approach. Newcastle against Wolves, it wasn't like all-out press. It was slightly different, the way that they managed to eventually get a 1-0 win. That still wasn't Newcastle anyway. Anyway, they're free-flowing best. Easy for you to say.
You're certainly not at your free-flowing best, are you, Chris?
Strike first the mote from thine own eyes, as our Lord and Saviour once
yes,
said,
yes, absolutely. So there is going to need to be an evolution, though, isn't there, George, where Newcastle are concerned? Obviously, Nick Valdemar has come in, and he's different to Alexander Isak. They're not going to be able to play the same way.
No, and you know, I think it's pretty stark when you're in when it's a match like Bournemouth, where it is just one man up front for long periods. You know, 5-4-1, as Chris said, it was a sort of defensive setup, and I think probably anticipating more energy, more aggression from Bournemouth that kind of just wasn't there. It's worth remembering what a brilliant start to the season they'd had. You know, their best ever start to a Premier League season, and so I think they probably expected an onslaught. thoughts, and it didn't really materialise. I mean, I think part of that was because Newcastle did defend well. But yeah, at the other end of the pitch, it's going to take time. They've had a I don't want to keep talking about him, but they've had an absolutely world-class forward there, somebody with great movement, someone who wants to get on the ball and run forward, someone who can sort of do bits of everything. And you know, Voltimada is very different. There were moments on Sunday where Newcastle were looking to play the ball into the box and he wasn't there, that he was dropping deep, he was looking for the ball. Now I'm really excited about watching him and seeing what he can do, but it's going to take longer than just a couple of weeks with, as Chris said, limited time on the training pitch to know where, you know, to sort of anticipate what he's going to do, where he's going to be. And, you know, there are obviously other players in the team who were kind of coming into the team. And, you know, it's going to take a while to gel that all together. Newcastle not having a striker over the summer and in pre-season and in the first games of the season is obviously really tough. You know, but there will be other games. Be interesting to see what happens when Gordon and Voltimada are in the team together, possibly with Alanga. You know, there's going to be a lot of pace there. You know, Voltimada is going to look to drop deep, but that'll leave space behind and those other two players can come into it. I mean,
you need those players to be getting up and around him though, don't you? Because if he is playing those little clever passes around the corner and dropping the ball off, if there's nobody up there to take advantage of that, then, you know, it's not going to work, is it?
I'm excited about what Newcastle will look like, but they, you know, I don't think Bournemouth is a sort of very fair example about the way they're going to play long term, but also they just don't know each other well enough yet.
So, Chris, what is and what isn't clicking? Match of the day highlight our performance in various measures on Sunday night. Not all that pretty, if we're being honest. 10th in the league for shots, 17th for shots on target, 19th for goals, 19th for shot conversion, 15th for expected goals, 16th for big chances, and 18th for big chance conversions. They're pretty damning statistics, those.
Yeah, I mean, it's only over five games, so Newcastle will hope and believe that stretches over a longer period and improves. I mean, the opposite is you could say that the defensive solidity is only over five games, but things aren't necessarily clicking yet. I am, like George, I am enthused about the prospect of what can come for Newcastle. I think that what you've seen early on is that Jacob Murphy has struck up a relationship already with Voltimada. It didn't pay off at Bournemouth at the weekend, but the Jacob Murphy chance, Newcastle's only shot on target, came from him playing off Voltimada. There were a few other moments, including a time where Murphy was in behind the defence and sort of hesitated almost when it looked like he could have gone beyond. I think that that's because Murphy absorbs information. That's why Newcastle like him and the coaching staff like him so much. He will carry out exacting instructions, and clearly he's already absorbed that. Whereas I think his teammates, what they need to do is, whether it's Gordon, whether it's Barnes, Murphy, Alanga, whoever it is, you need to get bodies and midfielders in and around Voldemort to make sure that there people are getting beyond him. If you're going to come deep, you need people to go beyond him. But also for Voldemort, I think there were other moments when he needed to get in the box or Newcastle needed to cross it in, because the opposite of the relationship between him and Murphy is that what actually worked against Wolves was Jacob Murphy put the ball in the box and Voldemort scored a header. Newcastle didn't do that, really, at Bournemouth. The one time they tried to put the ball into the box towards Voldemort, albeit it was behind him, the ball from Livramento, he had a penalty shout, which you can argue either way whether it should have been or not. So I think it's about cohesion. It's about developing the way Newcastle are playing. It's also players who came at the side who haven't had that many minutes, and Newcastle are going to have to work out, and Eddie Howe's going to have to work out how he extracts more from players who have just come to the side and get those minutes. Someone like Joe Willock, who really thrives on regular football, he isn't going to get regular football, seemingly. He's going to have to try and find his best levels while only coming to the side and only getting a few minutes. The fact that Newcastle haven't had Wissa available yet, so they haven't had that sort of focal point. The fact that Newcastle also haven't had Jacob Ramsey. I think Ramsey probably would have started at the weekend and he might have offered something a little bit different and maybe would have offered a little bit more than Joe Willock. I think he would be ahead of him in the pecking order. So there are some mitigating circumstances, but these are also mitigating circumstances Newcastle are going to have to work with. They're going to have injuries throughout the season. They're going to have people who aren't in form, but they need to find solutions and they need to find a way of making this attack click as quickly as possible.
One thing that I just wanted to sort of highlight is that this is a very similar position in some ways to this time a year ago, and also very different. So this time a year ago, Newcastle were labouring in terms of results performances. The two things kind of flipped over a bit, but Newcastle were inconsistent. But what was happening last season was that there was this real unsettled feeling inside the dressing room after a difficult summer. And that was really at the heart of what was going on at the club. And there were a couple of times when Howe had to take players aside, Isak included, after a couple of really difficult performances. And, you know, had to start again with them, you know, proper back to basics chats about what was going on, about them being unhappy. Now, certainly, as far as we know, that is not the case this time. This is much more of a kind of footballing jigsaw that needs to be solved. It's not about personality. It's not about attitude or things like that, which is the good thing. You know, they had a disrupted summer in terms of the striker, and, you know, disrupted obviously in terms of the transfer market and the way that they were slow to kind of make inroads in it. But there's been a really good spirit around the place, and they took that into this season. Now, I mean, the only reason I said, as far as we know, you know, because obviously teams and dressing rooms need results, they need good results, they want wins. But there's been none of that sort of disharmony going off around the place at the same time. So this is much more of a footballing story. Newcastle trying to find, trying to find the sort of the answers to the problems, trying to get the jigsaw all together. And so that's one reason that, you know, we shouldn't be sort of feeling overly negative, I don't think, about the start. There is a lot of mitigation and context for why it's been a bit tricky, but there's a good feeling around the place and, you know, a feeling that they will get it right.
We saw a full debut for Malik Chow as well. Chris, what did we make of him? Could have potentially seen red, maybe should have seen red.
Yeah, I think he was very fortunate. He got yellow carded for
hooked,
a definite hand. Yeah, he got hooked
later as well.
He was deliberate handball and then, pulled back Christie, who was trying to get through and beyond him. So, yes, he was fortunate there, but I thought you saw some nice touches from him. You've seen that in his cameo so far, that he is comfortable on the ball. He can play diagonals. I think what Newcastle realised, that there is a rawness there to a certain degree, or at least some things they need to iron out. When does he jump? When does he stay deeper? Because what I think was nice that you saw that him and Botman can bring to the team is their ability to step into midfield at certain points. They were almost taking it in turns to do that. I think it was encouraging, but still far more to come from him. Newcastle had extra height with him and Botman in the side. Botman, having struggled at Leeds, I thought was far better at Bournemouth, did well. What I really like that Botman does is he plays those little passes into midfield. He does step up. He can also play the longer passes. He's someone who has a lot of confidence in his teammates receiving the ball under pressure. He's quite happy to play the ball into them, even when because he's confident that the Tonali and Miley can deal with it in the situation where the ball's coming to him. But that was that felt like a big performance for him. He's only played in a back three when he started so far this season. He's been frustrated. He wants to start matches. But yeah, for both of them to get game time, they're going to be required over the course of the next weeks, obviously. Not just because of Fabian Schär's injury concussion, but also because these players are needed. Howe needs to rotate, and Byrne has started every single game so far. So I very much doubt we won't see that we will see him on Wednesday night, and so therefore it could be that one, if not both, of them retain their places.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the kind of plus points of the season so far. I agree. Having sort of watched it back, I think Thao
Chow
probably should have gone, and well, you know, potato. Howe said afterwards that he'd taken him off because he was fatiguing, but I think that's probably quite a good excuse to say that he took him off to make sure he didn't get sent off. But you did see real quality from him, and yeah, great to see Botman back as well. That competition there now is really good, is really strong. It's exactly what you want. It's going to be a bit of a new position really for the head coach to deal with, to have this strength and depth and to have these options to choose from. That's what you want across the pitch.
I also want to say it was nice to see Jamal Lascelles back on the football field as well.
Was very nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And perhaps we'll see him against Bradford, who knows. But this is what you want all across the pitch, players looking like they feel like they should play. I'm not sure we saw that in every position on the pitch at Bournemouth. I'm not sure midfield, I'm not sure the player, Chris mentioned Willock and Miley. I'm not sure that they sort of did enough to be sort of to have you. I mean, admittedly, very difficult when you're competing against Guimarães and Joelinton and Tonali, but you're wanting people to be coming on the pitch angry, feeling like they should be playing, and doing absolutely everything they can to be staying in the team. But centre-half, really encouraging.
Yes, we mentioned Bruno there as well, George. I think Chris has got off a bit lightly after he chose to write about Bruno's 68 consecutive starts, only for the captain to be rested. Chris,
yeah,
what's your excuse, Chris?
I mean, I think, by the way, I think he said in his copy, it was certain to be 69 at Bournemouth on Sunday. But it is, I mean, it kind of is pretty... It's remarkable to see him get rested. You just don't expect it because he has been so fundamental, such a mainstay of the team. And even on, you know, the odd day when you complain about his kind of lack of impact, when he comes out of the team, you just see how important he is to the whole tempo. Anyway, over to Chris to get his excuses in.
Well, my excuse for that one was I don't think I was the person who actually wrote certainty. I think that was changed within my copy. I think it was hardened up slightly.
Oh, here we go.
I'm going to blame some editor. But no, I mean, I was reluctant to write the piece mainly because I was in a bit of a bad mood because I'd written a few of the pieces last week and I was told to do it before the Champions League game. But I'm relieved that I did write it because I wouldn't have been able to write about his consecutive Premier League starts if I had waited. And I asked Bruno about it at the Champions League, the pre-Barcelona press conference, and he sort of chuckled and said, he basically admitted that whenever Eddie Howe takes him to one side and he has conversations with him, including when he came back from Bolivia with Brazil heading into the Wolves game, he basically tells Howe that, you know, I always want to play, you know, I'm fine, I always want to play. And I think that it was almost for his own good that they took him out of the side. Newcastle, it's now 9 Premier League games that Bruno Guimarães has not started in since his full Premier League debut against Southampton in March 2022, that Newcastle have failed to win any of them. They've drawn 5, lost 4. I think that partly shows how important he is, not just as the captain, but also what he brings to the team. So they're going to have to find ways to win without him, though, because he can't play every single week, because he will be going away and playing for Brazil as well during the international break, so it will be absolutely relentless schedule for him.
Right then, chaps, let's have a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment to talk about the lasses. So Newcastle's senior teams played simultaneously on Sunday. While I was watching the Premier League game, of Bournemouth may have been a bit underwhelmed. It was an absolute horror show for the lasses in Birmingham. Morgan Gutrout and Jordan Nobbs returned to midfield, but the latter was subbed at half-time with Newcastle 3-0 down. And it's a tough debut in goal for Femke Liefting as well. A better showing in the second half from us, but the brief hope offered by Jazz McQuaid's early goal was quickly quashed by Birmingham's fourth, and Beth Lumsden's late strike was merely a consolation. The league table is only just starting to take shape, so plenty of time to right the ship, but a sobering result nevertheless.
Yeah, I mean, it's not great, let's be honest, to be 3-0 down at half-time. Birmingham were up there last season. They're obviously a kind of a good team, but this was a match where Newcastle had spoken openly about bouncing back, and to be then 3-0 down at half-time isn't really that response that you're looking for. And, you know, we're talking about Eddie Howe's team still sort of getting to grips with the changes they've made this summer and, you know, the new reality of, a different striker, so on and so forth. It feels to me, albeit I've not watched them live yet, that the women's team are having the same thing. They've made a huge amount of changes. They're getting to grips with a new way of playing and a new squad, and it just isn't clicking as of yet. So, yeah, I mean, concerns in the sense that that is a big defeat. I've sort of looked at the stats, and in terms of possession, in terms of chances, all of those things, you know, positive passes. Newcastle were better than Birmingham, but they were also, you know, they were also chasing the game. So in some ways, that's not necessarily a great metric to sort of look at. The league table shows that there's plenty of time to catch up. It's very early days, but yeah, they need to settle down, and they need to start getting positive results.
And George Sue Cummins going to be retiring as well, a hugely inspirational driving force behind the women's team.
Yeah, this has been on the cards since the end of last season, really. I think we'd mentioned it, but it's the end of an era for the club. You know, Sue's been in this role, head of women's football since 2016, when the team were part of the foundation, and she's obviously played a pivotal role in what's happened since then. And you know, obviously Newcastle's double promotion, going full time, professionalization of the whole thing has happened under her watch. I mean, that doesn't really touch the sides of her involvement and her influence at the club. She's been a hugely influential person in women's football in general in the Northeast. I mean, she's been around since the start. Someone that we know well on the podcast, and you know, someone I've written about a lot. I hope that we'll get her on at some point just to talk about her role over the decades. Yeah, I mean, it's because of people like Sue that women's football is thriving in the Northeast now. I mean, as I say, she's been influential for decades in the growth of the women's game, a proper foundational formative figure. And she deserves all the plaudits. There were lots of nice words for her last week when this was confirmed. Becky Langley called her an incredible leader and said her passion and drive has helped transform Newcastle United women on and off the pitch. The club would not have made the growth that it has without Sue's commitment and talent. And yeah, can't say fairer than that. So well done, Sue. Thank you for everything you've done for Newcastle women, but also for women's football in general.
Yes, absolutely fabulous stuff. Sue, enjoy your retirement. Right then, let's have another break, chaps. I'm back in a minute to talk about Bradford and Arsenal. Right then, boys, Carabao Cup is back. In some ways, it feels like probably the least important fixture of the week, doesn't it? But we are the holders, Chris.
Newcastle are the holders of a trophy for the first time of any form since 1969-70, when they ended that season, having won the Intercity Fairs Cup the year before.
And still doesn't feel real to me.
Yeah, and domestic trophy was 1955-56.
You can fight us for this trophy.
Absolutely.
Well, probably shouldn't say that because, you know, you don't want people to have fights in football stadiums. But, I mean, come on, like, having spent decades getting this trophy, we can't just give it up without a scrap, can we?
Prize it out of my cold dead hands, basically.
So I have looked at the last two times in Newcastle, so both in terms of general trophies, the Intercity Fairs Cup. So Newcastle then reached the quarterfinals the following season of the Intercity Fairs, lost against Anderlecht 3-3 on aggregate, but lost on away goals. And in 55-56 in the FA Cup, they also got the quarterfinals, then lost 2-0 at home to Sunderland.
Oh, so, no.
Yes. So hopefully Newcastle get to a round which has finals in it, but hopefully actually final singular, and you get back there and then defend the trophy this year. But as we well know, there are a lot of matches for Newcastle to navigate this season. I think if we're being honest, and anyhow, I'm sure he will talk about when George goes to his pre-match press conference on Tuesday, we'll talk about how you're putting out a team who believes can and should win, despite Bradford City being top of League One and flying at the moment. There'll be significant change, I'm sure, at the Newcastle side, although it may be fairly reflective of the team from Bournemouth. But if you were going to really look at the three competitions Newcastle are in at this stage before the FA Cup begins, this is third in the list in terms of where Newcastle are focusing on right now. Yes, they would love to win it again. They would love to defend the trophy. But for now, the focus is on the Premier League, it's on the Champions League, and making sure that they sort of kickstart both of those campaigns, really. And so it'll be interesting to see the use of that squad, the deeper squad that they have now. Can the players who haven't had many minutes really step up and put their hand up for greater minutes and to really raise the level of the entire squad? That's what these matches are going to be used for, I very much assume. So it'll be fascinating to see what team Howe puts out, and then also how well they can respond, because it's very difficult when you're in a team that hasn't played together and that when you haven't had many minutes yourself to actually put in those performances.
And Bradford have had a absolutely brilliant start to the season as well. They've only lost one match. That was away at Doncaster. They've drawn a couple and they've won every other game. And so it's one of those classic banana skin games. They are top of League One. And so, you know, Newcastle need to approach this professionally. This is one of these interesting tests. I'm sort of thinking about this a lot at the moment, like these these different challenges. You've played Barcelona, like against one of the biggest clubs in the world. That's your last home game. Now it's Bradford, top of League One, you know, who'll be coming to the stadium. They've sold out the away end and, you know, they'll be desperate to get one over. Now, can Newcastle, obviously, with a huge number of changes, which will absolutely happen from that Barcelona game, can they approach it in a professional way that gets the job done, that shows the same sort of elements of the way they play? I hope they can.
It'll be really interesting to see how Eddie Howe approaches this one as well, because like you say, the three completely different approaches to three games in a row. Like the Barcelona game, the Bournemouth game and this game are going to have completely different teams, completely different approaches. It's going to be interesting to see what he does. We would expect a lot more changes as well, Chris, wouldn't we? Miley reached 50 appearances v Bournemouth. Do we think he will start again with Joe Willock, or is there more needed from them in order for that to happen?
Well, no, I think partly because there's more needed from that, that's why that they are likely to get the extra minutes. They are players who need minutes to be able to perform and get better, and this is another opportunity for them at St James's Park in a match where Newcastle are expected to have a lot of the ball. I thought Miley was all right at Bournemouth. Yes, he's going to take time to really develop in his own, but I don't think he was bad. I just think he was all right. Willock didn't have a great afternoon. I don't think he's had a great start to the season, but again, he had an injury at an awkward moment in pre-season. Willisula, we expect, will probably lead the line. Now, a big match for him as well. Scored against Liverpool, his first Premier League goal for Newcastle, then had his first Premier League start for Newcastle at Leeds. Didn't really work out and nearly left the club on deadline day to go to Eintracht Frankfurt. Sean Neave may come in on the bench. I'd be surprised if he starts. I watched him in the UEFA Youth League last Thursday. He played well without scoring, but you can see the exposure he's had the first team. What effect that's had on him. Other changes, Jamal Lascelles, as George mentioned earlier, could well play. Be interesting to see how he uses Anthony Gordon, whether he starts or not, because you very much expect that he starts against Arsenal, but does he come on against Bradford? Does he start him? Other changes inside, does Barnes come back in the team, Alanga, all these players, and how they're used in those sort of situations. And then we very much expect in goal that this will be Aaron Ramsdale's full debut for Newcastle. Nick Pope has been exceptional in goal so far this season, makes big saves at big moments, even when he hasn't been called upon for long spells. But Ramsdale, I think his presence has actually elevated Pope. I think it's lifted him to new levels. Newcastle know that Pope's had a couple of injuries over the last couple of seasons, and that therefore they need a number two who's really going to push him and possibly even take the opportunity if it comes. So for Ramsdale, I mean, Newcastle will hope that he isn't very busy from a shot-stopping perspective, but it'll be interesting to see someone who's more comfortable with possession at his feet, whether you can see those actual effects and how that plays out in a competitive match.
So, George, looking ahead to Arsenal, we mentioned before different approaches for different fixtures. What do we think it'll be for this one?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's fascinating. You've just seen Man City park the bus.
Absolutely,
At Arsenal. I mean, seeing Man City play like that after years of being a possession-based team went very differently there. I mean, my guess is that Newcastle will try and do what they did against Liverpool and Barcelona and sort of play with that style. You know, Arsenal have had some challenging days at St James's Park recently. It's usually been up against that sort of team, that kind of energy. So that would be what I would expect, I think. And, you know, if the result goes okay against Bradford and Howe's been able to sort of manage his squad well, then there should be some fresh players ready to come in and give it everything. One very interesting thing about Arsenal is that they're having to integrate a new centre-forward as well. They're having pressure, but they're not necessarily doing a lot with that pressure too. So it feels like they're a work in progress. They've obviously they've had a pretty decent start to the season, albeit Liverpool are kind of forging ahead at the top of the table. But I think Howe will be looking at that fixture and thinking that there's something to get from that. That if they push and harry Arsenal, I mean, Arsenal have got a phenomenal squad. You look at their squad now. Do even Liverpool have a better squad than Arsenal at the minute? I'm just throwing that out there. I mean, I think they've got some incredible players, but I don't think it's quite clicked for them yet.
Do you know what my dream scenario would be for that match?
Mikel Arteta weeping.
Well,
on
and
the side
this
line.
Will be why he would be weeping, because my dream for that game is that Newcastle win 1-0 and score a hugely controversial goal And Joe Linton scores that goal because they all hate him anyway and they think he's a bully and a thug.
Disgrace.
Yeah, he's a disgrace. And I really, really, really want with every fibre of my being for that to be the case again, because there's nothing more beautiful than the tears of that man. I really want that to come back. I'm desperate for it.
I remember last season, I mean, there was obviously Disgracegate, which was hilarious in so many ways, and just in terms of Arteta completely losing his cool and not being able to explain why he was so angry. But then I think it was last season when he just talked repeatedly about how he was like given begrudging compliment to Newcastle by saying that they're very good at what they do.
Yeah, that's...
He just kept repeating this sort of phrase. That's like when someone says to you,
that's a nice shirt, but I wouldn't wear it. That's that kind of feeling, isn't it?
Mikel, Newcastle are very good at what they do, which is beat Arsenal.
Yes, they're getting used to their own new centre-forward as well, aren't they? He's not quite clicked into place yet, Chris.
No, although, I mean, he has scored, but I think it's still a sort of work in progress there, and that just shows, I mean, that they didn't really play with an out-and-out centre-forward long spells of last season, so they are adapting almost to introducing an out-and-out centre-forward. Newcastle are introducing someone who maybe is more of a hybrid number 10/striker, so it shows that structural issues are not only there for Newcastle. He's more of an established, I mean, he's 27, Gyökeres. He's someone who has been around for quite a while, yeah. Done really well. His career sort of really gone up at several levels in the last couple of years. He's done very, very well in Portugal and then come to the Premier League, hoping to really hit it off, having not really done to Brighton and then gone to Coventry and then sort of moved up the levels. Whereas Valtamada had his sort of breakthrough season last year, hasn't had the sort of necessary exposure to the very highest level for a long period of time. But yeah, it just shows there's not only Newcastle who have sort of teething problems sometimes with introducing different stylistic strikers into the side.
George, do we think Newcastle really need to get a positive result against Arsenal?
I don't think they're sort of at the point where they're under pressure, but I think they are at the point where, you know, you look at the league table, they're in the bottom half, they've won one match, incredible number of clean sheets, 4 out of 5. You know, there's some encouragement to be taken there, but not firing on all cylinders yet. I mean, it's a difficult thing to say against an outstanding team, which Arsenal are. But then, you know, Newcastle have designs on competing with them at the top of the table. And, you know, you also don't want that gap to get too big. I mean, I think if they were to lose against Arsenal, then it puts pressure on the second Champions League fixture, and then it puts pressure on the Nottingham Forest game. But I think it's okay to have some leeway because this is still a team and a work in progress. But I fancy them. I fancy them to get a positive result.
Fair play. Right then, chaps, a couple of emails to get through before we finish up. This first one, I had the opportunity to attend some of the events that Newcastle and the Premier League hosted this past weekend in Kansas City. Firstly, the club did a fantastic job. A big thanks especially due to the Sarahs from the fan engagement team. I'm sure many others were involved as well, but I truly appreciated the effort the club put in to help us American Magpies feel connected to something bigger. That's from Matt and the boys in Kansas. I've spent 25 years watching this fabulous club from the Midwest. This weekend in Kansas City, Missouri, I ran my ass across the fan fest like I was an 18-year-old centre midfielder again to get Alan's signature on my only Shearer kit as he snuck out of the place. Next up on the signature hit list is George Culkin and then Michael Jordan, apparently.
In that order, good. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And St. Louis, he says, is rich with German heritage. We have a German sausage shop where you can have a pint while you wait for your sausage order. Chris, that sounds like some kind of heaven, that, doesn't it?
Absolutely sensational. I'm going to look up flight immediately after this.
And that was from Tony Agizzi in St. Louis, Missouri.
In St. Louis, yeah.
Yes, so it seems that the Premier League event went very, very well, but listening to The Rest Is Football, a rival podcast, but a more of a sort of varied one, which Alan Shearer appears on, it sounds like he had an absolutely nightmarish trip back. Flights cancelled, was very critical of American Airlines, and it seems like quite a few people had a few issues back, so I think that Shearer didn't get back until mid-afternoon on Monday, or was due back via Paris at that stage. So I think there was a very angry Mr. Alan Shearer post-event.
Trains, planes, and automobiles. Eh?
But it's great that the club are obviously part of this. I mean, it's a Premier League event, but having been there a couple of years ago and seen the impact the club had in the summer, it's just great that this sort of stuff is going on. Thank you very much indeed for those emails, Matt and Tony, as well. You can have my signature for nothing. What does that mean? don't know what I'm trying to say there. Don't know why you'd want my signature.
What would you get signed? It would have to be, would it be one of your running jerseys or something, George?
Well, that I could get signed. Could that.
Sign one of his tears.
Yeah.
Don't know how that would work.
One of your checky shirts that makes you look like Woody from Toy Story.
I could sign something with my tears.
While we're doing shout-outs as well, I've got to say hello to Bianco, Sal and Craig, who I met, not in an Italian deli, as it sounds like, but in the bar at St. James's Park before the Barcelona game. They've been listening to the show from the very, very first episode, and they absolutely love it and don't miss it ever. So lovely to meet you, lads. I hope you had a decent night. Yes, so I'll probably see you again at some point. You never know. We'll bump into you in the bar at some point in the future. Right then, I think that's about it, chaps. Give us a follow on Twitter, X or on Blue Sky at Pod on the Tyne. Drop us an email, podonthetyne@gmail.com, and give us a rating and a review on your podcast outlet of choice. Anything to add, chaps, before we clean up?
Well, George, having been to the South Coast, we're going to have a rotation of our own, and I am the one who is going to be writing about Bradford City and Newcastle United on Wednesday night. Although George and I will both be on the podcast, he is going as a fan, as an observer, aren't you, George?
I am. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, so that'll be a slightly different change. That'll be
rest your weary legs.
I'm just running out of words at the end of this podcast. That'd be a change of perspective.
Rest his weary head as well.
I could throw cabbages at Chris as well into the press box. Why not? Might do that.
Yeah, you'll not be far, will you? You'll be able to launch. Yeah, all sorts
have a safe journey into St James's Park, Chris. Enjoy the trip. I hope that's not too taxing for you. While I go and have a lie down.
Right, that's enough of that, boys. That's enough of that. Right then. Thank you very much for listening from everybody at Pod on the Tyne. We hope you have a nice week. We'll speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye. Goodbye. Sound like Anne Robinson.
Ciao.